We could spend all day saying thank you to everyone who supports WSHU with financial contributions. I'm Desiree DiOrio, and one way I say thank you is by covering public policy on Long Island to help you stay connected and informed. Your financial support is the lifeblood of the WSHU newsroom. Thank you for making this trusted resource available to our community. We're expanding our world together.
The Connecticut Audubon Society has released its annual State of the Birds report, highlighting progress but also continued challenges to the state's bird population. Mylon Bull is co-founder of the State of the Birds report and says Congress must act to stop federal funding cuts for conservation and look to increase it instead.
Already in Connecticut, several of our national wildlife refuges are on offshore islands. We're having trouble even maintaining boats to get out to these islands to have them protected, monitored, and conserved.
The report also highlights the continued decline in the nation's bird population, which has lost 3 billion birds across the continent since 1970. You can find the report at ctaudubon.org. This is WSHU's After All Things, with daily news and culture from around Long Island Sound. Advocates say the government shutdown will have a lasting impact on local food pantries. New York approves a natural gas pipeline for waters off New York City. Plus, UConn researchers are looking into the history of a Connecticut institution for the disabled. Those stories and more are coming up. I'm Sabrina Garone. Connecticut state lawmakers are back at the state capitol in Hartford this week for a two-day special session. WSHU's Ebong Udama has the details.
The agenda for the special session includes acting on a revised version of a controversial affordable housing bill that Governor Ned Lamont vetoed in June after opposition from some Fairfield County towns. The governor says he's satisfied with the revised bill because it has input from mayors and first selectmen.
This housing bill is about making sure that we build housing in places where mayors want to put it. Mayors take the lead.
Lawmakers will also act on authorizing the use of $500 million in state surplus money to offset some of the federal funding cuts to social safety net programs. Lamont supports the move.
I think that's a reasonable number, as long as we can be very careful and I can take the lead in terms of what we do there.
The special session will be on Wednesday and Thursday. Ebong Udama, WSHU News.
Governor Kathy Hochul's administration is clearing a big roadblock for a natural gas pipeline off the coast of New York City. The New York Public News Network's John Campbell reports.
State environmental regulators approved a water quality permit for the Northeast Supply Enhancement Pipeline, a 25-mile gas line connector stretching from New Jersey to the Rockaways. It's a major reversal that's already angering environmentalists. The state had rejected the same permit only 5 years ago. But Williams, the company behind the pipeline, reapplied after President Trump pressured Hochul to approve it earlier this year. In turn, Hochul has convinced Trump to allow an offshore wind farm near Long Island. In Albany, I'm John Campbell for the New York Public News Network.
The last 2 weeks have brought chaos for food pantries and the people who rely on them. WSHU's Molly Ingram reports advocates say it'll have a lasting impact even if the shutdown ends soon.
Funding for SNAP has been allocated, paused, reinstated, and canceled again, multiple times. Jackie Riberty is with the nonprofit Connecticut Food Share. She says the chaos has instilled a fear in providers and the communities they serve.
We know that it's going to take some time for funding lags and for the needs that people are facing and for that fear that, you know, it was taken away once, what's going to happen next time? Can this happen again?
The next government funding deadline is in January, so Congress could get a spending bill passed to end this shutdown just to find themselves back where they started. Molly Ingram, WSHU News.
UConn grapples with the legacy of a Connecticut institution for the disabled. A conversation on that is coming up. Local support for After All Things comes from Hartford Healthcare. For the second time, all hospitals received A ratings from the Leapfrog Group, the nation's leading independent hospital monitor. This means that patients have access to the safest level of care, no matter which hospital they choose.
Listen, in my 20s, I had a lot of junkers, okay? I'm Davis Donovan. I'm a reporter and the host of the show Off the Path here at WSHU Public Radio. The windshield wipers barely worked. The headlights were stuck on bright. One of them, like the window, fell down into the door, so you just didn't have a window. Man, I had some that already had like 200,000 on them. Any car can turn into your favorite programs here at WSHU. Go to WSHU.org.
The town of Southampton will ease its rules on short-term rentals during next June's U.S. Open Golf Championship at Shinnecock Hills. Current law only allows Airbnb and Vrbo to offer rentals for more than 2 weeks. During the tournament, stays of 3 days will be allowed. Officials say this will help ease the traffic that crippled the town when the tournament was last held at Shinnecock Hills in 2018. A 17-year-old boy from Syosset has been charged in connection with the fatal stabbing of a 15-year-old boy outside a house party in West Babylon. The teen suspect is being charged as an adult. Investigators say they're still looking into what led to the confrontation. Bridgeport school officials say the old Bassick High School building has been broken into twice since closing earlier this year. They say the vacant Fairfield Avenue site is costing the district in security and utilities. Administrators are pushing for more police patrols and urgent action to secure the property. 6 men have been arrested in a massive Long Island drug bust tied to a multi-state fentanyl trafficking operation. Suffolk County officials say they seized enough fentanyl to kill the country's entire population. The haul also involved cash, firearms, ammunition, and pill pressing machines. The Mansfield Training School has been closed for more than 3 decades. Now, a team of researchers from the University of Connecticut are working to uncover what happened at the controversial institution that used to house disabled people. WSHU's Ebong Udama spoke with the Connecticut Mirror's Amelia Oat, who's done in-depth reporting on this. Their conversation is part of the collaborative podcast, Long Story Short.
A professor and a former UConn student got you interested in this story. How did that happen?
I was friends with one of the students who worked with Professor Brugman on the project around the Mansfield Training School archives when she was a senior at UConn. And she had contacted me. Also, she's also a journalist. And she had contacted me, letting me know that, you know, Professor Brugman might be interested in talking to me. And I found the story just fascinating.
What was so fascinating about the story? Because there was a time when institutions like this were top of the news, but it seems to have faded away. Why is it important to keep that memory?
So I'm not from Connecticut originally. I'm from New York, and I knew nothing about the Mansfield Training School. So to me, this kind of history tells us so much about how we think about people who are neurodivergent or with disabilities and how society evolves over time. And it tells us a lot about ourselves as human beings and as people. And the interesting thing about this story was that it's not just a Connecticut story. It's paralleled all over the country with these institutions. And there are multiple states across the country that have been trying to revive the history of these institutions to better understand, you know, what was going on in the past.
Could you just give us a brief background of the history of the Mansfield School itself? How did it start and how did it evolve?
So Dr. Brugman would definitely be a better person to talk to than I would about this, but it began with a doctor named Henry Knight in the 1850s, and he had wanted to run this kind of a hospital for people with special needs. He had asked for state support and did not initially get it, so he funded it himself. And the hospital evolved from there, did eventually get state support. It became kind of a labor farm in the 1920s where people were living there, but also doing like different like farm work, sewing work, different industries, basically to fund the institutions. And it evolved over time to become sort of these dormitories for people where, you know, giant dormitories where people were living with different disabilities. In the 1960s, it allowed UConn to come in and do some experiments there on people, you know, testing brain function and things like that. And as our understanding of the rights of people with disabilities changed, the school tried to become more of a place where people were given small cottages to live instead of being placed in these big barracks types rooms, and trying to incorporate people more into the community. There were all kinds of abuses that were exposed in the 1970s. And there was a large court case that happened, which ultimately led to the closing of the school.
Now, something interesting that comes out in your story is that Professor Brueggemann and her crew of researchers found much more interesting information outside of the actual archives of the Mansfield School. Could you just tell us a little bit about that?
So I think you're probably referring to the family members themselves that they talked to. The archives obviously gave them a background on the history itself. And Professor Brueggemann also came into contact with some family members who had siblings that were residents of the training school at one time. And I was also able to talk to a couple of those people and hear their stories. And this is another reason, going back to your question about why is this important, it affected families, and it still affects the history of families today who want to understand what their siblings experienced while they were at the training school. And Professor Brueggemann also talked to former employees at the training school who remembered the different iterations of the school as it progressed from being like more barracks and institutional like to a more community focused type of place, if you can call it that.
Mm-hmm. And what's happening to the actual site right now?
Nothing, honestly. The site is, the buildings are not usable. For the most part, they are old and broken down. The site itself has just sort of languished. There's a piece of it that is being turned into a new Wyndham Technical School, but that's a small area. And there were conversations about turning part of the site into an autonomous vehicle driving race track to supplement the transportation center at UConn, but it looks like that will not be going through. So right now, not much is happening with that property.
In the meantime, Professor Brueggemann and her crew of researchers are still deeply involved in trying to piece together what has happened.
Yes, Professor Brueggemann wants to do an oral history of the school. And that's part of the reason she's talking to family members. They just created a new website about the school with an excellent timeline that I referenced in my reporting. They've done a lot of really great work, and I look forward to seeing what else they do.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Amelia. Long Story Short comes from WSHU Public Radio and the Connecticut Mirror. Subscribe to the podcast to hear more from Amelia about Connecticut's defunct Mansfield Training School for the Disabled and the small group of researchers seeking to memorialize its history. Available wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Ebong Udama.
For the latest news from around Long Island Sound, listen to us on the radio at WSHU.org or with our free WSHU app. After All Things is supported by Hartford Healthcare. Hunger touches every community, and so does generosity. Find local food drives, pantries, and meal programs on WSHU's new Community Food Resources page. Whether you'd like to give support or you need it for yourself, everything is in one place at WSHU.org. I'm Sabrina Garone. Have a great rest of your day, and I'll speak to you tomorrow.